Hey, everybody, it's the Damage Report. I'm dressed like John Iadarola. My name's Brett Ehrlich, and it's Wednesday, which means one thing, bagels here at the office, but also J.R. Jackson. How are you, sir?
I decided not to dress like John today.
Good.
But you know, I'm playing the role. I'm dressed like JR on Wednesdays.
If it's any consolation, I regret that I dressed like John today. I feel like a banker. Set you up with a nice no-load mutual fund.
Well, let's also keep it real. I mean, John was working security yesterday at the event, at the rally.
And that was the best thing.
That was awesome. It was awesome. And number two, you have to get like a jacket that's another size smaller to make sure that your arms are like stressed.
Right.
In the middle of it, in order to pull a full John look today.
This jacket is too small, but like in the places where my body stores extra food for long trips across the desert because of my Judaism, I guess. I just have like this hump area. But unfortunately, it only feels too small, but doesn't look too small because unlike J. Arms Jackson and John Iadarola, I do not have biceps. I do not grow them. I don't know what to do with protein in my body and process it. Okay, anyways, we have an amazing show for everyone and we want to get to it. But just a little rundown of what's going to be in it. We got the debate from last night. Some of the best moments, some of the worst moments, and specifically the way the media is framing it in the wake of all of that. And did it meet everyone's expectations? California has launched a new attack against Donald Trump. But in a constitutional framework that they've put out, it is not against Donald Trump. It is essentially a way to keep him off the ballot in the primary, however. We'll see if any other states decide they want to take that up. Also, Claire McCaskill's trending for giving advice, electoral strategy to people who actually, you know, have won elections lately. And then AOC takes on Mitch McConnell. We'll give you the specifics of that. And we have an amazing interview about environmentalism and expectations around the world. What does that mean?
Beautiful.
That's what a tease is all about. Are you ready, JR?
I'm ready.
Okay. So last night's debate was progressives versus everybody. It seemed like going into it, the framework that the people wanted to put on it was, would Bernie attack Elizabeth Warren? However, it seemed like everybody was just attacking Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. We have one example of that. One of the big moments was the back and forth between Bernie and Tim Ryan, who told Bernie that he doesn't know what's in Medicare for All. Take a look.
They will be better because Medicare for All is comprehensive. It covers all healthcare needs for senior citizens. It will finally include dental care, hearing aids, and eyeglasses.
But you don't know.
Second
that.
Of all.
You don't know that.
Second
Bernie.
Of all.
We'll come to you in a second.
I do know when I wrote the damn bill.
I mean, that's amazing.
So this is one of those moments. I remember Anna was talking about it. We did our pre-debate show the other day. And Anna was saying that she wants Sanders to come out swinging more, fighting back more. And I was saying he should be a bit cautious with that because the one thing that's bogging him down unfairly is this characterization that he and everyone that supports him are a bunch of crazed, angry people
right.
who don't have real points. And if this is the way he's approaching, I think it worked. I was thinking just instead of just when someone comes at you, make sure you sound more angry, but then say the basis for what you're talking about and say it definitively. And that's exactly what it was.
Right.
And it stuck out. Everyone here was, well, at least from the room I was in, was like, oh, which is what you want. You want a good reaction because that means finally someone said what everyone else has been thinking.
Right. And the best thing about watching it here is we watch it on two different streams. There was one in the studio and one out there. And we got it first that's out true. There. And we were like, no. And then like 20 seconds later, you just heard a roar from in the studio. People go, you get a Bernie. It was fantastic. But yes, I agree. That is the framing that everyone kind of is putting on it, mm-hmm. which is I want to challenge Bernie Sanders's approach to Medicare for All and tell him what it actually means, even though he wrote the damn bill. It's very frustrating. But it wasn't just Bernie who was frustrated with the way that things had been portrayed by the moderate candidates out there. Here's Pete Buttigieg challenging people to think bigger.
Still the conversation that we've been having for the last 20 years. Of course we need to get money out of politics. But when I propose the actual structural democratic reforms that might make a difference, end the Electoral College, amend the Constitution if necessary to clear up Citizens United, have DC actually be a state, and depoliticize the Supreme Court with structural reform, people look at me funny. as if this country were incapable of structural reform. Does anybody really think we're going to overtake Citizens United without constitutional action? This is a country that once changed its constitution so you couldn't drink.
So I also want to add that the reason you don't hear the end of anyone's thoughts is because every clip of it is Jake Tapper going, your time's up, that's all, we're done, we're done. You had 19 seconds and no, that was 20. That's something, he's talking about getting money out of politics. And as you know, Pete Buttigieg just took over as head of Wolfpack. It is that pushback that you heard from a lot of moderates. Mm-hmm. And Pete Buttigieg is kind of angling, and maybe he may genuinely believe this, but at least it seems like he's angling to be one of the more progressive candidates, right, pointing out something that, you know, for him, it's a constitutional amendment to get money out of politics, but taking it back to the Medicare for All debate, people saying, yeah, it's a big change. What's wrong with that? If we can change the Constitution of the United States, the sacred document, to add things like don't drink to it, and by the way, ending slavery was a change to the Constitution.
Totally.
Why can't we do changes structurally to our medical system?
Yeah, if any of these other progressive, and again, I believe that Warren and Sanders did much better last night as far as defending a lot of the principles. But it's going forward, there needs to be, this is what strategists around the progressive candidates I think need to do. Start compiling the list of things that have drastically changed in our country. As you mentioned, slavery, women's rights, minority rights after slavery ended, because there's lots of changes that need to happen even though everyone's considered free at the time. So the bold changes that happened for progressing the country throughout history, list those, make sure you have it logged away in your head to fire off at will, and then list the kinds of things that conservatives always opposed. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're dealing with again right now. But the things that the big ideas, which I think was mentioned last night, the big ideas of tax cuts and more corporate bailouts and handouts, those aren't considered outrageous and giveaways?
Right.
But here, these are?
Yeah, another thing Buttigieg said that was actually picked up on today by Trump and the Republicans was essentially saying, no matter what we do, folks are going to call us socialist. Yep. Like he says, if we change the medical system, I think this is what people, if we change the medical system, then they're going to call us socialist. But if we take this middle ground approach, they're also going to call us socialist. And actually, Kennedy of Louisiana, Congressman Kennedy of Louisiana, came out today and said the lesser of two socialists is still a socialist. And Trump retweeted it, which just underscores that point.
Yep.
So the messaging needs to be more about how we can make material change to this country that improves people's lives, and more specifically, be honest about it. And that was another thing that Bernie Sanders pointed out, was that, and it was after people watching the debate had said the same thing, which was, it seems like Jake Tapper is always asking questions that repeat Republican talking points.
Absolutely.
And that specific framing was around Medicare for All. Because yeah, Medicare for All, they always, and we'll skip to video four here, they say things like, Medicare for All will take away your private insurance. And most of the time they stopped there. There was one time out of many questions where that did repeat Republican talking points where Jake Tapper said, and replace it with a government program. But they're just forwarding these Republican talking points. And so video, the fourth video that we have is Hickenlooper kind of trying to make that case to Bernie.
I think if we're going to force Americans to make these radical changes, they're not going to go along. You throw your hands up, but you haven't I can do it. But you haven't implemented the plans. Us governors and mayors are the ones that we have to pick up all the pieces when suddenly the government's supposed to take over all these responsibilities and there's no preparation, the details aren't worked. You can't just spring a plan on the world and expect it to succeed.
God. Okay. Again, why are you doing this? Why are you running for president if you think there's nothing much we can do about it? You're just going to tell us something to change the country and then you're just going to do it? Now us governors have to scramble and do something. Isn't that your job? Okay, so you apply for a job, you come in, your supervisor goes, listen, this is what we're going to do. You have this responsibility, that responsibility, and the third responsibility. Oh man, I've never done those three responsibilities before. Let's not try that. I just came in. It's not my job or anything to change things and legislate and implement the legislation. Yeah, it sounds real hard. That's why it's your job.
Even that is a Republican talking point, because you can count time and time again when Republicans on debate stages have said, I want to get into this the office of the president so I can eliminate this government agency, so I can get everything out of everything out, all these different government programs out of commission. And that's an amazing job. Like, I think that's the job you want if you can get it, which is to be president of the United States and not do anything. And that's essentially what they're saying. We would be remiss if we didn't include one of the biggest moments of the night. This is Elizabeth Warren articulating the same thing that that JR was pointing out earlier, which is, what are you here for if you're not here for anything?
You know, I don't understand why anybody goes to all the trouble of running for president of the United States just to talk about what we really can't do and shouldn't fight for. Our biggest problem in Washington is corruption. It is giant corporations that have taken our government and that are holding it by the throat.
Absolutely.
So, and just one thing I need to point out about Medicare for All. Anyone who looks at you and says, yeah, but they're going to take away your insurance. Yeah, they're going to take away the insurance that unions have fought so hard for. First of all, there's an insanely high number of unions that support Medicare for All. Why? Because now they can not have to negotiate and spend all that time convincing your employer to give you better coverage or to provide better coverage or carve that out or charge people for better coverage. They can put more money in your pocket by getting you more better wages and other protections and doing the things that they should be collective bargaining for. And then also, Medicare for All is not taking away your private insurance. First of all, no one likes their private insurance. They like having something that they know is kind of protecting them, but they hate being on the phone for hours and hours saying, hey, I need you to cover this medical expense that you said you would cover. And the idea that John Delaney is out there protecting the medical industry, it speaks volumes, because essentially, to hear him defend why he said, to hear him say, let's hear about someone saying that, you know, the medical industry is not siphoning billions of dollars out of the healthcare industry. We're going to go to a health exec who siphoned $1 billion out of the healthcare industry.
Call them out of the yard. The one thing you won't hear, lastly from this on me, for me at least, is what they won't also say is the approach of we can't do it was something that lost Hillary Clinton in the last cycle, the election. That was her approach too, and we're sticking to it. Are you still on that side? Because that side didn't win against this guy.
Yep. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk about a new law or regulation in California that might keep Trump off the ballot. Don't go away. We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time. Donald Trump is running for president. He's going to be on the ballot in every single state, primary and general election. And the only person who can stop him is 2024 presidential candidate Gavin Newsom of California. Newsom is he is the governor of California, and he just signed into effect a new essential election law saying that Trump might not make it on the ballot unless he submits his tax return. So according to
the LA Times. The law requires all presidential candidates to submit 5 years of income tax filings. They must do so by late November to secure a spot on California's presidential primary ballot in March. State elections officials will post the financial documents online, although certain private information must first be redacted. And here's what Governor Newsom said about it. As one of the largest economies in the world and home to 1 in 9 Americans eligible to vote, California has a special responsibility to require Americans to require this information of presidential and gubernatorial candidates. These are extraordinary times, and states have a legal and moral duty to do everything in their power to ensure leaders seeking the highest office meet minimal standards and to restore public confidence. The disclosure required by this bill will shed light on conflicts of interest, self-dealing, or influence from domestic and foreign business interests. JR, what do you think
of that? No, again, the wording, I think, is working out well, because we were talking about this before, and I was like, well, it's the primary. If you're thinking about this California primary, really doesn't matter. Trump's going to be the nominee anyway, right? But there's the wording, at least for this, lets it be known when people are going to fight it, which they will. Now they have to be on the record to be opposing this, the last part. The disclosure required by this bill will shed light on conflicts of interest, self-dealing, or influence from domestic and foreign business interests. So once people start complaining and say, how dare you put forward a bill that would allow us to shed light on these three problems, then the question won't be asked, but a normal journalist would ask the Republican opponents of this, so are you against us finding conflicts of interest, self-dealing, or influence from domestic and foreign business interests? Are you for those things to happen for a candidate? If a Democrat had these problems, would you be for that? But no one's going to ask that question. But the language of this law sets it up so people can say, this is the side that you're on, and this is the only thing you're fighting for, because that's the only thing we're looking for from these tax returns. Not any vindictive agendas, but looking for the truth.
Right. And so people from the Trump camp and a lot of Republicans have jumped on this as an opportunity to say, well, obviously you're just mad at Trump. Ronna McDaniel, chairwoman of the Republican National Committee, called the new law gimmicky and just plain dumb. Another person, Tim Murtaugh, Trump's comms director, said the bill also violates the First Amendment right of association, since California can't tell political parties which candidates their members can or cannot vote in a primary election. Now, the response to that actually was given out today by someone who helped pass this, which is, listen, there's tons of rules around why you can or cannot get on a primary ballot. And that involves having enough signatures, having this, having that, getting enough donations. Those rules exist. This is just another rule. And their argument is, constitutionally, it is an equal opportunity regulation, because as it stands now, Democrats who will not be able to qualify for the primary ballot include Joaquin Castro, Tulsi Gabbard, and Joe Biden, because Biden only released 3 years of tax returns.
So that's next talking point for Democrats when they talk about how Ronna McDaniel said it's gimmicky and just plain dumb. Headline, Ronna McDaniel thinks conflicts of interest, self-dealing, influence from domestic and international interests is gimmicky. She also thinks those things are dumb to fight against.
Yeah. During legislative debates on the bill, GOP legislators repeatedly accused Democrats of being motivated solely by anger at Trump. This is actually something that I heard from a friend who's like not really a staunch Republican. He's just someone who generally observes politics. He's like, you're mad because he's mean. And as a response, you're just passing stuff like this. I think, first of all, it's okay to be mad that he's mean. I'm also mad because he's racist, and I'm not alone. Today, a poll came out saying that Donald Trump is viewed as racist by 51% of the country. So I think there's a place for saying whether the president of the United States is a D-bag and terrible and racist. So I think that's one point. But also Jerry Brown essentially said, when he vetoed something like this a long time ago, he said, today we require tax returns, but what would be next? 5 years of health records, a certified birth certificate, high school report cards, and will these requirements vary depending on the political party that is in power? That seems to be happening right now. I don't know about this as like if it will stand up in court. I have a feeling that it probably will not. But that's just because it's so explicitly partisan, but I also thought that many aspects of Trump's immigration policy would fall for the same reason because they were so explicitly targeted. And I don't know, but I think this is absolutely fascinating, particularly given the number of people who live in states where Democrats have the majority in the state houses who might pass something like this. But do you think, just aside from the conflicts of interest, I mean, people would say the conflicts of interest, those are already there, self-dealing. Uh-huh. I mean, Trump organization was already like proven by the IRS to be illegally laundering money. Like, he's done that in the past and people know. And then domestic and foreign business interests, like, we know he's violated the emoluments clause. So,
right.
Who knows?
Yeah, no, the thought about the mean factor. Again, they say things so explicitly, you can easily point out and show where they stand. Okay, so Republican legislators call separating 911 more kids from their families after judge struck down that policy mean. They say immigration camps where people are kept in inhumane conditions. It's mean. So make sure that you highlight the things that they're simply calling mean. It's anti-Semite, homophobic, racist president. It's just mean. Because those the mean policies that he's got, a mean approach he has to politics, leads to mean policies, which destroys people's lives and kills people. He's also mean because he likes to rile up other countries and spark wars. Mean, that's all it is. People dying is mean. Healthcare neglect, it's mean. That's all it is. It's just mean. It doesn't mean anything.
Yep. We'll be right back after this and more progressives versus everybody.
Free stuff from the government does not play well in the Midwest.
That is Claire McCaskill, wizard of a politician who, by the way, just totally lost her election, giving advice to the progressive candidates in the debate last night as to how they should be campaigning. We'll get into that and more. But first, here is that whole clip of her expert analysis. Take a look.
Senator, a very direct question having to do with Youngstown, Ohio, having to do with a place I used to live, Joplin, Missouri. What happens when you walk into those communities and say, great news, you're all going to get green jobs. We'll need the keys to your F-150s because we're going all electric.
It would not be good.
Yeah.
And I think what Tim Ryan is trying to express is a bucket of cold water, which is reality about where America is. America is generally not as far along the left line as Bernie and Elizabeth. Free stuff from the government does not play well in the Midwest.
Right now, Ohio just signed in a socialist program propping up the coal industry. So free jobs from the government, free stuff from the government is exactly what just happened. And guess what? It plays well there. It's so frustrating. One other thing before you get in here, JR, is just this. The fact that Brian Williams is saying, what do you do when you go into Ohio and say, give me the keys to your F-150? No one's gonna say that except a Republican. So it's not the people pitching these ideas, it's the Republicans who have planted that seed falsely in your mind about F-150 repo men. And you're just forwarding that false narrative. That's what's so frustrating.
I guess I'll start with the F-150 part. Ford commercials say F-150, they might say this, who knows? F-150, America's best-selling truck. Guess where the F-150 sells? In America. Guess where I see F-150s? In Southern California, everywhere I go. They're not only confined to Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. People drive trucks everywhere. Guess who likes their trucks? Californians, New Yorkers, Floridians.
Yeah.
Bougie people up in Washington, maybe. I'm trying to think of all the places they hate people. People in Chicago drive trucks, you guys. So you know that murderous hellhole, Chicago. They drive trucks there too. So this whole weird straw man of you're gonna take away the F-150 keys from that Oklahoman, That's not a thing that just Midwesterners like. This is Americans. People in California have guns too. We always have to have this conversation too. So the people in the Midwest that want this free stuff, like their free police force, their free fire department, all these free things. You might take away their keys to give them some free fire protection. I think Michigan, the companies and corporation up there, really enjoyed that free auto bailout. Did they enjoy that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that considered the Midwest still? Or is that the fringe outskirts of the country?
And the framing of that proposal is, listen, we know that things are messed up and we can fix them right now. So we're going to come in there and fix things. And so with the oil industry, with the car industry, they did that. And when it comes to green jobs, all they're saying is like, you want an energy job? We're going to make sure we can give you an energy job. And guess what, dude? The future is stuff like not like renewable energy. And there was just a study that came out that said in most cases, unsubsidized renewable energy is cheaper than fossil fuels. And we pour so much money into that. So the pitch isn't we're going to give away free stuff. By the way, the pitch is the exact same thing as Waleed Shaheed points out in his tweet about this, besides saying that Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar are from the Midwest as well. But he also tweeted, Medicare and Social Security are both technically free stuff and they play very well. And the reason that they are technically free stuff is you pay into it, man.
It's so ridiculous. Hey, you know what? Old school people used to type on typewriters. Are these libs gonna come in here and give you this damn computer to take place of your typewriter? It's innovation. People advance. You get things that are better, and then people adapt. And guess what? They still live, and they actually make a better living because it's moving along with progress in the country.
Yeah, and also Medicare and Social Security are the same thing as Medicare for All would be, which is it isn't free stuff. You're essentially paying your normal tax bill, and you get stuff in return. In return, the same way you pay your dues to your union and you get stuff in return. The same way you pay your private insurance and you get stuff in return. The only difference is when you pay into your private insurance, they siphon billions of dollars out of that every single year to make profits. Just ask John DeLay.
I wonder how my tax dollars can go to wars. And I don't get a tank at the end of the year, but it goes to something I'm supposed to be supporting. But when it comes to something you actually do get back for your tax dollars, that's a bad thing. If I'm giving away money so the corporations can make money to kill more people, I'm supposed to accept that though.
And also just one last point, Parker Malloy tweets out this of Claire McCaskill herself. She said the following, let's take a look. Out of curiosity, why does Claire McCaskill have all this free time to be paid cable news commentator again? She lost her election. How? She was so moderate. She actually went on and backed up on Fox News. She backed up Trump's, immigration policy. So that
worked out.
That's Claire McCaskill. Good job, buddy. We got to move on to one more story. Mitch McConnell. So Mitch McConnell is being so hypocritical that AOC just had to step in and set him straight. The Department of Justice and multiple nonpartisan organizations said, listen, it is proven that the Russians hacked into our election databases and either tried or succeeded in 50 states, so we need some kind of reform. Then Mitch McConnell blocked all the bills trying to reform election security and just make our elections secure. His response isn't, these are wrong, these are messed up. It's, no, you're a McCarthyist. Take a look.
Keeping our republic means we can't let modern day McCarthyism win. So here's my commitment. No matter how much they lie, no matter how much they bully, I will not be intimidated. For decades, I abused my Senate seat to stand up to Russia and protect the United States of America. I'm proud of my record. I'm proud that it's right there in black and white, and liars cannot gaslight it away.
He's specifically referencing some Dana Milbank piece in the Washington Post that said Mitch McConnell is a Russian asset, but it didn't say he's actually a Russian asset. It said that he was stepping in to make it more difficult for democracy to happen. And there's one more clip that we need to show you that is particularly terrible. Take a look.
Facts matter. Details matter. History matters. And if our nation is losing its ability to debate public policy without screaming about treason, that really matters.
Screaming about treason. Jared, do you have anything to say about people who scream about treason?
Yeah, there's this guy that who lives in the White House sometimes and then screams about treason. But treason to him is criticizing him, writing a bad article about him, disagreeing with his policies. That's treason to him. Every time he says you're doing this to destroy the United States of America, he calls it treason, when really it's destroying his approach and his lawlessness to do what he wants without anyone telling him any different. That's treason to him, and he says it a lot. I'm wondering if you have a problem with that too.
Yeah, at every single turn. So where does AOC factor into all this? Picking up on the McCarthyism claim by the fearless dear leader Mitch McConnell, she tweeted, "McCarthyism is the practice of baselessly accusing political opponents of being communists as unjust grounds for targeting and harassment. You were blocking action to protect US elections despite official DOJ pleas." Hashtag bitch please. That doesn't make you a communist, it just makes you a bad leader. I added the bitch please part for those listening to the podcast.
She'll add it next time. No, it's very true. I mean, that's the other thing. Just start throwing names out there next. We already throw around, you guys are Maoists. And then like people just throw out any kind of thing that sounds scary enough. And now it's like, oh, these communists. Oh, yeah, this McCarthyism. Because what, people? You think everyone that was around in that time forgets about it? And AOC wasn't around during that time? There's this thing you can do. You can learn about history. And then point out what it really was, instead of them just buying into this straw man. Again, they build something up to beat it down. It's really easy when it's your own bad argument that you're beating down.
And I got kind of mad at this Dana Milbank op-ed where he wrote essentially like Mitch McConnell's a Russian asset. And I don't like it because the timing, it seems like it's just trying to replace Donald Trump in the wake of the Mueller investigation with Mitch McConnell. The specific reason they're saying Mitch McConnell is a Russian asset is because he's blocking this election reform, which is something meant to thwart Russia's attempts. Also, Mitch McConnell recently opened up his state to investment by a giant Russian oligarch who is Oleg Deripaska, who's directly related to all of the Mueller probe and everything like that. And then it also opens up the doors to everyone who thinks, oh, Russia's in something, you're a liar.
Yep.
Like all the people who are like, what's with this Russiagate? It's like, dude, we're specifically saying that there is one instance like this where why don't we just shore up our election process against Russian hacking? That's all we want to do. But more specifically, what Mitch McConnell here is doing is a protracted effort to thwart democracy. And this is just one aspect of it. If Russians want to come in and make it more likely that Donald Trump wants to be elected, he's like, sure, go for it. I would accept that because I want power. But it also has to do with gerrymandering, which he's all about. And he helped block Merrick Garland from being on the Supreme Court, which allowed for the recent decision from the Supreme Court to allow wildly partisan gerrymandering, which results in this graph that I show every time I'm on this show, which is how gerrymanders skew state legislatures. Here are three states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and North Carolina, where Democrats won 54% of the statewide popular vote in Pennsylvania, but they got a minority of the seats. Michigan, they won a majority of the vote, a minority of the seats. North Carolina, majority of the vote, minority of the seats. And this, Russia, everything else, voter suppression, voter roll purges, they're all part of a protracted effort to make it less likely that what you vote for happens. And so it's not that he's just a Russian asset. It's not that he's a Russian asset at all. It's that he will take all comers who say that they can help him keep your vote from making a difference. So you need to fight back. We gotta take a break. We'll be right back. One issue that matters most to voters going into this election is climate change. And it affects everybody, everywhere, all communities. And here to join us is the National Field Director of Moms Clean Air Force and a recent author of a New York Times opinion piece called Black Women Are Leaders in the Climate Movement is Heather McTeer-Tony. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. So you wrote this op-ed and it essentially says, despite stereotypes, and this is quoting from you, I love this line so I pulled it. Despite stereotypes of a lack of interest in environmental issues among African Americans, black women, particularly Southern black women, are no strangers to environmental activism. So you are the regional director, a regional administrator of the EPA under Obama, so you are an environmentalist. You were the youngest mayor of Greenville, Mississippi. So you are you're involved in politics. So tell us why you wrote this piece and what you mean by it.
You know, it's amazing because all my life I've seen African-American women who have been leaders in climate, and we just haven't gotten headlines. So it's oftentimes lost on the larger environmental community that when you're talking to communities of color, they're leaders that we're talking to each and every day. That was certainly my experience, both as a kid growing up in the Mississippi Delta, but also as mayor and as regional administrator for EPA, and now in my role at Moms Clean Air Force. Women are very active in the movement, and African-American women, especially in the South, have had a connection to the land for so long that it's a part of who we are. So you can't separate climate and environmental issues from our everyday activity. And that's what I was hoping to bring some light to, that there are a lot of different voices that are very engaged in this conversation. And if we listen to people who have been connected for years and years and years, we may be able to talk about not only some new solutions, but opportunities to reach communities of color and bring them into this conversation in a larger way.
So why do you think that people don't necessarily think people of color when it comes to environmental activism?
It's all about stereotyping and framing what you see. You know, a lot of times the stereotype of environmental work is people who are hugging trees and wearing Birkenstocks.
Yep.
And reality is,
I know plenty of them.
You know, folks in my part of the country and here in the state of Mississippi, folks work in their gardens. They talk about what the hunting seasons are like. They talk about crops. They talk about how their knees ache when the rain is going to come because they got arthritis. You know, it's part of our conversation. And I think it's been passed down from generation to generation. So we've been a part of this talk. We've been in the environment, but we have not really been really wrapped into the larger objectives of how we talk about environmental issues in our communities. So, you know, I talk a bit about environmental justice, which is very, very critical to a number of our communities across this country, communities of color in particular. But we should begin to see African-American people involved in the conversation about sustainability, resiliency, green economy, how we can turn having the conversation of climate and clean energy, 100% clean energy, into wealth builders for communities of color. I think as we begin to have those conversations a bit more, then we're engaging segments of the population who see this more than just somebody who's trying to save the trees, but trying to save entire communities because we're all going to be impacted by climate.
Hi, Heather. It's JR. So I was talking, we were thinking about when the stereotype is the tree hugger with the Birkenstocks, and that was floated and caught on because it has such a negative stereotype. So I think with the missing of black folks, particularly black women who have been on this for so long, how do you connect that to, say, other folks? Or even just, you specifically said black women, like black men even, to get on this train. I see where you're trying to go, but then how do you flip such a normally negative stereotype and make it a positive one for folks to even listen to? We already know many people don't listen to folks in the black community already when it comes to political advancements and agendas anyway. So this seems like an uphill battle. I just wonder what your approach is to make it stick.
You know, it's interesting because it's an uphill battle outside of our community. You know, when I'm thinking and I'm talking about folks like I talked about in the article, like Dr. Mildred McLean, who's working in the community in Savannah, Georgia, people know without a shadow of a doubt that Dr. McLean is not only focused on environmental issues, but she's focused on how to improve the community as a whole because it's been integrated into every single thing that she talks about. Same thing with Nataki Osborne Jelks, who is in Atlanta, Georgia. And while she's a professor at Spelman College and teaching environmental sciences, she's also very well integrated into the West Atlanta community where this is a part of the normal every single day conversation. So it's more than just talking about environment as this far off a thing that is in the future that we may or may not have to be impacted by. It's woven into everything from criminal justice to housing to education to financial wealth. And I think as we begin to frame it in that way, we see where it's integrated into our communities already and not something that's so far detached from us.
And finally, you're involved in, the Moms Clean Air Force. How do people get in contact with that? How do they join the fight that you're waging?
Absolutely. Well, we are a community of over 1.2 million moms, dads, grandmas, aunts, play cousins from all over the country. And you can reach us through momscleanairforce.org. And it sounds and spelled exactly like it sounds, momscleanairforce.org. Connect up with us on Twitter, on Facebook. You can follow us at Clean Air Moms. You can follow me at Heather McTeer. We want to hear from all of our moms and all of our family across from the country, because it's ultimately about protecting this climate and protecting our planet for our children. I have an almost 3-year-old and a 13-year-old at home. So if I don't do this for them, then that's what the fight is about.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us, Heather McTeer, Tony. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, we're going to kind of break it up a little bit, talk about some of the gossip going on around Washington and the world. Don't go away. When I sit in on other people's shows, I like to make up segments and pretend they've happened. So it's tea time. This is tea time. Mario Lopez went on Candace Owens' show, which sounds like a Mad Lib of ridiculousness. However, it did happen. And he is now trending because of what he said about raising children and gender identities. And Candace said, a lot of weird trends come out of Hollywood. And one of the weirder ones for me is the new trend where celebrities are coming out. And I know Charlize Theron did this a few weeks ago, is saying that her child's picking their gender. And this is strange to me. And they say, oh, I looked at my child and my child was swimming in a bathtub and looked up and said, mommy, I'm a boy. That's weird. She says, I'm trying to understand this new Hollywood mentality where they just think their children now have the mental authority. And Lopez responds, please don't lump me in with that whole group. I'm kind of blown away too. Look, I'm never one to tell anyone how to parent their kids, obviously. And I think if you come from a place of love, you really can't go wrong. But that at the same time, my God, if you're 3 years old and you're saying you're feeling a certain way, or you think you're a boy or a girl or whatever the case may be, I just think it's a dangerous as a parent to make this determination. Then, I think you're going to be a boy or a girl, whatever the case may be. It's sort of alarming. And my gosh, I just think about the repercussions later on when you're a kid. You don't know anything about sexuality yet. You're just a kid. JR, you're a parent.
Sexuality is different. Lopez. Sexuality is different than gender. It's the first problem you got. So mm-hmm. when you're a kid, you don't know about sexuality yet. I agree. But you know, a lot of parents do. When we consider it a straight or a gay or an identity issue that we are accepting, you know, a lot of parents do. Again, like you said, I'm a parent. When my kid was a year old, it was, oh my God, he's going to be a heartbreaker. Oh my God, you better look out for the girls. Oh my God, the girls are going to be all over him. Oh my God, oh. And it was constantly about how he's going to be having sex with girls at 1 year old.
It's creepy.
I mean, that's what we're saying. People don't realize that's what you're saying. So when you have this little ball of a child, of a baby, you go, man, everybody keeps talking about how many girls is he gonna have? He's a baby. We sexualize them then, and we don't bat an eye. When they're 7, we say straight up, oh, Maya, look at them, they're holding hands. Oh, it's gonna be his little girlfriend. That's sexualizing the situation. Why aren't they just friends? But if a 7-year-old says, hey, you know, I like wearing pink, they'll go, oh my God, he's turning into a girl. A color we gender identify. But none of that matters to us.
Yeah, we also used to tell kids, you know, white people used to tell their kids, you know what? You're genetically superior to black children. And then we also told people, like, it's fine to drink alcohol while you're pregnant. And the doctor was smoking cigarettes. There's a lot of things that we learned we're teaching our kids that are very terrible. We're trying to put them into certain categories that they aren't necessarily part of. And I think also a lot of being a parent, from what I've learned from my friends, is just like picking your battles. Like, if the kid wants to be a girl, let's do it for a second. I don't care. And if the kid actually turns out to like have that gender identity when they do reach a mature age, you're going to look back and say, I am glad that I let that kid be his or herself. And that's parenting advice from someone without kids. JR, thank you so much for being on the show.
It's fun times. I'll be back tomorrow.
All right. And thank you so much for watching tonight. There is more debate stuff, so check out that, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.